Coming up on this episode of the Mario Rosenstock podcast.
We have another call coming in, Carl, and it's from Christy Moore, would you believe?
Hey, Christy, how are you?
How are you, Carl? Oh, Jesus, I'm really getting a buzz listening to this, and I'm thinking it's January and new me, new year, all this sort of stuff, but I have a bit of a belly on me myself. My big problem, Carl, is the old nibbles in the evening. You know, you've had your dinner, you've had the breakfast, you've had the lunch, but then it's 9:30 and prime time is on and Miriam O'Callaghan is walking on there and you get the old... You're thinking of putting on the old cup of tea and you're, the biscuits and the hobnobs are looking out at you and they're begging you. They're begging, go on, Christy, take me. But is there any healthy snack that you would recommend to satiate a man's appetite in the evening? Just wondering. Thanks for a friend.
Great question, Christy. Great question.
And it's a question I'd imagine many of us would like to know the answer to. And in fairness, Carl Henry of Operation Transformation fame has the answer. And he also has the answer to loads of other diet and fitness related questions put to him by me and other celebrity callers, of course, like Dr. Ava Orsmond, Keith Duffy, and even George Hook calls in at one stage. We also tackle a couple of trickier subjects like, should we really be telling people it's okay to be obese if that's what they want to be? Or is it now taboo to call somebody fat at all? Should the word be banned? But it's not just health and fitness advice in this chat. We get to know a lot more about Carl himself and what he's all about.
As I get older, you know, I've got to mind my own weight at all, and I've always had to do that. Some people in my role are naturally kind of built like that, or they're obsessively kind of built like that. I would regard myself as someone who's quite normal, and I've got to mind my own weight as much as the next person. I was big into wrestling, and the WWF superstars came to the Point Depot, and they all came to the gym to train, like The Undertaker and Rick Rude and Hulk Hogan and The Ultimate Warrior and the British Bulldog. Shawn Michaels is there, and like, you know, I'd had all the figurines and the action figures at home and the ring and whatever, and then you'd be rocking into the gym, and there they were. She produced a book about 10 years ago, roughly, called Run, Fat Bitch, Run. Would that be released this year if through a publisher? I'm not sure it would. Hello, Miriam. How are you?
Hi, Carl. I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions. You look really well, you know, in general. I wonder, since you started the show, did you notice a kind of an uptick in, like, female attention?
What a question.
My full chat with Carl Henry coming up in just a couple of minutes, but the week was dominated by a couple of stories, and one of them was, of course, the Banshees of Inisherin getting 9 Oscar nominations for Martin McDonagh, Brendan Gleeson, Colin Farrell, and Kerry Condon, and Barry Keoghan, and everybody else concerned with that film. What a great result that is. I think 14 Irish Oscar nominations overall. An amazing result. And this week, in our exclusive comedy on the Mario Rosenstock podcast, we managed to gain access to the Academy of Motion Pictures, Arts and Sciences, the Oscars, their voicemails. It's so active this week. Wait till you hear this stuff.
You've reached the voicemail of the Oscars, Academy of Motion Pictures and Sciences. Leave a message.
Hey guys, this is Tom. Tom Cruise. Not nominated again. Not nominated again! Paul Mescal. Oh God, Paul Mescal. I never heard of the guy. Who's Paul Mescal? What do I have to do? Huh? What do I have to do?
Yes, is that the Oscars? This is President Michael D. Higgins of Ireland. I sincerely urge you to give the best foreign language Oscar, please, to Colleen Kuhn. Yes, if you wouldn't mind. When I was Minister for the Arts in Ireland, I enabled many of your Irish tax incentives that you so love. I could put in a word, you know what I'm saying, to, you know what I'm getting at. Colleen Kuhn is Michelle Lamaze.
Happy Jesus, top of the morning to you, Oscars. Shiver me shamrocks. This is Michael Flatley, be Jesus. Me Irish heart was devastated, don't you know, that I haven't been nominated for Best Actor, be Gara, in Blackbird. Me granddaddy, the tinker Flatley, always said, sure even a tin knocker shines on a dirty door, be Jesus. Me an ill wind fall on your thatched house. Gnarium Borlet.
Hi, this is Paul Mescal. Would you please ask Tom Cruise to stop calling up to my house and shouting up at my window? Last night I found him abseiling down from my living room ceiling in full commando gear. It's gone too far. Thank you.
Hi, Ryan Doherty here from RTE. Still waiting to hear back from you regarding that hosting gig for the Oscars. If you haven't found anybody yet, I'm up for it. Give us a call.
It's Flatley here again, be gabs. So I'm not nominated, be Jesus. But you did give a nomination to a thing called the Banshees. A jiggery, pokery, bigara and bigasha, cabbage-filled, Darby O'Gill, Kamalia, belly go backwards, Irish cliche. What's the world coming to?
And more exclusive comedy every week on the Mario Rosenstock podcast. And it's the only place you can find this comedy right here. By the way, thank you to everybody who got in touch with me regarding my interview on the Tommy Tiernan show just last week. I think about between 800 and 1,000 of you got in touch with me personally by text, email, or direct message on Instagram or Twitter. Thank you so much. I didn't realize it would resonate with so many of you out there. It was about family damage and how we're all damaged by our familial experiences. It doesn't necessarily have to be sexual or violent abuse. It can be just dysfunctional families and how it's taboo in Ireland to talk about such things. And many of us, I used to believe for years that everybody used to live in a kind of a Walton's family, and it was only my family that was completely dysfunctional. So thank you to everybody who got in touch. Boy, it lifted my spirits during the week. And I suppose the motto of the story is, it's better out than in. It's better to talk about these things than not. And we have become better at talking about all these issues, whether it's mental health or miscarriages, or in my case, kind of the difficulty of having a kind of a rickety, kind of a dysfunctional family background, and which leaves a kind of a certain emotional damage which you have to deal with as you get older. Anyway, thanks a million for everybody for getting in touch. If you want to get in touch yourself, mariorosenstock@gmail.com. I read them all. I get back to about 95% of them. And you can also find me on Twitter, Instagram and Facebook. But now, listen, the man of the moment, Carl Henry. When I caught up with Carl, he was in his lovely new house in Clonakilty, County Cork, where he moved from Dublin just a few months ago. He was doing the interview from his training room. And I put it to him that he was looking ridiculously fit and healthy for mid-January. So let's join the chat right there. Carl, listen, thanks a million for joining me.
Delighted to be here. How's it going?
Brilliant. And you're looking absolutely radiant. You're looking disgustingly healthy for January.
Well, in all fairness, if I didn't look healthy, I'd be in the wrong job. That goes without saying in terms of what I do. That's for sure.
Do you feel a bit of, that's an interesting point, actually. Do you feel a little bit of a pressure on yourself, the way you physically look?
Do I feel pressure? I suppose it's one of my values. It's important to me to look healthy and to feel healthy, especially as I've got older. Is there pressure? I think there is, absolutely. Especially when you do some media work. You've got to be selling it by living it. I think that's important. And also for my clients, from a work perspective. But I suppose there is a bit of pressure, but that's not a bad thing. But also, it's just what I do. And you know, for me, being healthy is important. And if it wasn't important, I'd be in the wrong job. But when you're selling it, you're selling a lifestyle, you're selling a concept, you're selling aging wellness and kind of long-term wellness. Well, then you have to be going through those things yourself. You can't do one thing and preach the other, because that wouldn't work. Plus, you're a student of health always. That never changes. And I think that's, you know, you're always learning. Things change in what we do on a yearly basis, on a six-monthly basis. There's new science and new stats and new diets and new theories. So you're very much a student of it yourself. So you have to be trying these things out and really getting a feel for it, whether they're healthy or unhealthy, or the good recommendations or bad recommendations. So you're always going, you're always aware of what's around you and what's coming. Yeah. And you have to be willing to learn. You never stop learning. You never know everything. It doesn't work like that. It's you're always just challenging yourself to stay healthy and to stay in shape, because you're telling other people who are trying to do it too.
I want to go back to the beginning, if I can, Carl. I mean, not everybody would be aware that your father, for example, is completely embedded in this whole industry, and
he
that his fitness trainer before you, and bodybuilding and fitness training. But this is just low hanging fruit for me, and I've got to go straight to it. And you've got to help me out as best you can. Give me as much as you can, because you see, your father, when I was growing up as well, was extremely well known as trainer to the stars.
He was.
Oh, absolutely. and I want to pick your brain. Give me any of the images that you see, because I've got the names in front of me here. People he may have worked with. Now, I'm aware that he may have not have worked with these people for, let's say, loads of time. But these apparently people passed through his door. You're talking about names like David Bowie, Bruce Springsteen, Gabriel Byrne, Helen Mirren, mm-hmm. Matt Dillon, Christina Ricci, Ellen Barkin, Dolores O'Riordan, Flatley, Fionnuala Sherry, Carole King, Emily Watson, Keith Duffy. How are you, buddies? Def Leppard, Damien Lewis. Do you remember any of these
people? You've done your homework, haven't you? You've done your homework.
Patrick did his homework.
I do. I spent before school, after school, anytime I wasn't in school, I was either in the gym, hanging around, cleaning toilets and scrubbing showers, or working, and my mum had a health food company. So I would have met and been around a lot of those people in the gym, and most of those names were in the gym at some stage or another, and lots of others. Like, I remember as a child, I was big into wrestling, and the WWF superstars came to the Point Depot, and they all came to the gym to train, like The Undertaker and Rick Reed and Hulk Hogan and The Ultimate Warrior and the British Bulldog. And it was like, you can imagine as like a 10-year-old kid going into the gym one day, and my dad, he didn't tell me they were there, and I walked in, and there was The Undertaker, all 6'7" of him, like bench pressing in the gym. You know?
That is hilarious.
All of that. Like, they were, and you know what? The gym is a very special place. It always was. But everyone got treated the same. And that was the key thing to it, which was it didn't matter who you are or where you were or whatever. You're just a normal person. And Dad would have trained with Vince Guaranda, a very famous bodybuilding guru over in the States in California, and would have worked in that kind of environment and then set up the gym in Pembroke Street. So it was a great place to grow up, because you wouldn't know who you bump into. Like Christina Ricci, she came up to Carlingford on holidays with us once for a couple of days. Like it was a great way to grow up, because you just wouldn't know who you bump into or where you were. Like one day you'd be in school, the next day you'd be dropping off to see Daniel Day-Lewis before when he was doing In the Name of the Father. Like, so it was exciting. It was. It was exciting, but you also learn to treat people as people. And I think that's something I learned at that age, and it stuck with me over the course of my own career. You know,
I know the image you paint there, it was just a kind of it's like a Simpsons image or something, or a cartoon image, that you would go into the thing and you'd see Bruce Springsteen bench pressing, and he's talking to, "Hey, David Bowie, pass me the bench press thing." "Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely, Bruce. Yeah, no problem. Hey, Pat, can you pass the bar?" And all this sort of stuff. Amazing, amazing. But The Undertaker, that's a great image.
Oh, the wrestlers room. And I have the photographs from there on the steps of Pembroke Street outside the gym. And like, Shawn Michaels is there, and like the Ric Flair, they're all there. And you're like, oh my God, that was just an amazing, as a 10-year-old, 11-year-old kid, he was obsessed with all of that. To meet these guys, but not just meet them, but just to be around them, and they'd be training, they came over the a couple of years later, and they did the same again, and like, just to be, just, it was like Christmas. You know, I'd had all the figurines and the action figures at home and the ring or whatever, and then you'd be rocking into the gym, and there they were.
Jeepers. And Day-Lewis, you mentioned Day-Lewis as well, yeah.
Yeah, Dad worked with him on In the Name of the Father before that, while he was getting ready for that role. Yeah, so it'd be kind of just like that. There'd just be people around, and it was just like, it was cool. It was kind of, yeah.
And when you're saying he would work with them, he'd be working them on a personal basis. That's what I'm saying. There's not like 10 celebs in the gym at the same time. You don't have Julia Roberts working out beside Hulk Hogan, working out beside David Bowie, working out beside Daniel Day-Lewis, working out beside Pat.
No, it'd be all kind of, they come in if they were in town, or if they were in for a concert or in for a movie or in for anything like that, they would be, you just kind of work with them while they were there. And
do you remember, Carl, do you remember those celebs, for example? This is quite interesting. Do you remember that they might stay in touch with him or keep in touch or thank him or stuff like that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, like Michael Flatley, for example, would pop in anytime he was in town. He'd just drop in, and like that, he'd just sit there, and he'd just come down the stairs because the gym is in the basement, and he'd just rock in and just, so like, yeah, and you learn that when you watch that in action, which is Dad's way of dealing with people and just being personable and just being nice to people. And I think people really remembered that. So they would drop, like, you know, they would drop in to see him, or every now and again, my parents would have gone away and stayed you know, with them in different countries and stuff. So it was cool. It was, yeah.
Not to be too personal, or to get too personal, unless you let me there, Carl, but would you be close with your dad?
I would. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. We're both Capricorns. So that's interesting. But I would, and I would have learned my trade through the gym and through being around the gym, and he would have steered me. It was never any pressure to do anything. It was to, you know, do what you want to do.
Yeah.
But I would have learned my trade absolutely through the gym, both in terms of the science side of what I do, but also in terms of how to deal with people. Because in what I do, it's a people business, and you've got to be quite good with people. So I would be very close with him. We have very similar interests, and yeah, I would say that we get on. I would say that we get on really well. Absolutely, yeah. Mm.
And listen, Operation Transformation. This is the season of it. It is the season of Operation Transformation. And of course, you're one of the everlasting, or the everlasting character from. You're the last one to go, the last man standing, Carl. They've all gone. You
know, that makes me kind of nervous sometimes. Yeah, I'm there since the beginning. 16 seasons of television and one season of radio before that. I always count that one because it's important to me. 17 years. It's, you know what? It's an incredible. It's an incredible thing. It just gives you such a launch pad to talk about health and wellness and give people tips and content and tools. And like the funny part of it is, naturally, I'm quite quiet and I'm quite kind of, I like to be in the kind of the corner of the room away from the center of attention. And the work perspective, my work brings me to different places, but it's a lot of fun to do it. It's challenging to do it. You really have to push your boundaries of what you can do as a person to be able to, like you've done TV, to be able to present and to be able to. It's a different skill set, so I enjoy the challenge of it, and always have enjoyed the challenge of it since day one when I was, I think I was 24 when I started. I'm 41 now, so yeah.
Oh, actually, you look really good for 41, yeah. Listen, come here, the format has changed, right? Why has it changed? I mean, I'm kind of, this is a rhetorical question, but I want to hear it from your lips. Why has the format changed?
Okay, well, I think health and wellness over 17 years has changed. What was, you know, and people's opinions on health and wellness, science's opinion on health and wellness, but also the technology of what we can use has changed. So the show has just gone with that. If you look at what we have now, we have 14 health indicators, all driven from the most expensive weighing scales in the country, which does all this lovely stuff, which gives us a full A4 page printout of each person. So we know their muscle, their fat, their water. We can tell if their left leg has more body fat than their right leg. It's fascinating. It's really interesting. So I suppose we're telling people more and more about that. We tell people, we're educating people on those, on what you can do. And health is, you know, the push for the show now is healthy aging and wellness as you get older. It's trying to improve your health as you get older. We look at our health-related fitness indicators for that. And it's educating the consumer, which is the fact that if you have a bit more muscle and you're a little bit stronger and you eat a bit healthier, you're going to age better and age well. And so it's just a constantly evolving, you know, program thing. And
but the belly tops have gone
there as long as we can. They have. Yeah, the belly tops have gone. They went about 2 years ago, but people kind of picked that up this year. We just give people options. What would you like to wear? So they're in a tracksuit and a t-shirt this year. That was the option. Or shorts and a t-shirt.
What if somebody wanted to wear the belly top?
If that was their decision and they felt strongly about it, they could. And, you know, the reason for that, people often wondered why, and we did get a little bit of flack about that, but actually it was all about physical body shape. So part of what I do from a health and wellness perspective is I show people that you can change you can reduce your waistline. So that's a health indicator. Mm. In a big t-shirt, you just don't really see it. Where when it's tighter fitting clothing, you can see the shape changing quite quickly. And you can see as much as I may say, you've lost 4 inches off your waist. In a t-shirt, you don't see it quite so much. So that's why, you know, years ago, and that was years ago when we started, that's why they were in, that was the clothing that was selected at the time. And that was the reason for the clothing being that way. And we did get a bit of stick for it, but, you know, we live in a world where giving stick is kind of just, it just comes with the territory, or getting it comes with the territory, and people love to have an opinion. So that's fine. You know, everyone's entitled to their opinion, you know.
I want to go to a place with this that I think is a little tricky for you, but I know you'll easily be able to deal with it. But it's more, and I'm coming from a genuine position of curiosity. Where do you stand on the idea that, hey, listen, being fat is absolutely fine, Carl. Being fat is great. And you see, there is a community and there is a constituency in modern day media and in the world, which is telling us, hey, if I want to be fat, I'll be fat. And I'm beautiful. And I'm also healthy being fat. Now, here's where I'm coming from as a layman, Carl. It seems that all scientific indicators tell us that being fat is not healthy. So telling people that I'm fat and I'm beautiful and healthy is maybe misleading and not a great idea. What do you say to that?
Okay, so I come to that from science and from medicine, which is that if you have the disease of overweight, if you have the disease of obesity, you're at a higher risk of all the health-related issues that will come with that. Weight and having overweight or obesity, it's a gateway disease. And what I mean by that is that by having either of those two things, it opens the floodgates to absolutely everything else in terms of risk factors, cardiovascular disease, all of them. They're linked back to weight. And that's not me saying that. That is every consultant I interview on my podcast will tell me that. Every consultant I talk to will tell me that. So that's the science of it, right? If you have either of those, you are at a higher risk from a health perspective of all the health-related issues. You're at a higher risk of bone issues. You're at a higher risk of metabolic issues. Now, can you be healthier at any weight than you currently are starting out? Yes, you can. You can be healthier if you are overweight or if you have overweight or if you have obesity and you walk more, you're healthier. You do some gym work, you're absolutely healthier. And that's brilliant. But it is important to remember that weight is one of the indicators of health. It's not the only one, but it is one of them. Therefore, it's not a taboo subject, which is what it's kind of starting to become. And I do have opinions on that because I think that it shouldn't be taboo. We should be able to talk about it and in a very mature way and say, look, you know, if you maintain your weight as you get older, no matter what weight you are, you're healthier. And that's important. So it is something. Yes, you can be healthier at any size, no matter what weight you are. If you move more, if you do some weight training, if you improve your flexibility, you're healthier and you genuinely are. But in the same sentence, you're still at a higher risk of all the health-related disease than someone who isn't carrying excess weight. And that's for loads of reasons in terms of visceral fat surrounding all your internal organs, in terms of the issues, in terms of joint and joint replacements, chances are you're going to need one quicker than someone who isn't carrying weight. So you're not saying it just for the crack. You're saying it because, well, this is what science tells us. This is what medicine tells us.
Yes.
And because we're on national television saying that, sometimes people don't like it. And that's okay because they're entitled to their opinion. But a lot of those opinions are that. They're opinions. They're not qualified. They're not insured. They're just an opinion. And there's someone sitting at home on the couch and decides, I'm going to do a video on Instagram and give out about these guys and or send DMs to them and tell them they're this, that, and the other. Mm. And we got all of that, particularly last year. We got a huge, I wouldn't repeat most of it because we got absolutely trolled for 12 weeks. For discussing weight and for trying to encourage people to lose weight, there was a sector of society that didn't like that. And then it's really interesting, all of a sudden there's a bandwagon and people jump on that bandwagon and then it becomes it rolls and rolls. And we just, you know what, we just stuck to our guns. We said, well, what are we doing here? We're educating the people about health. Let's just do what we do. And we can stand over it, which we can.
You're on Twitter, are you, Carl?
No, I came off it about a year and a half ago, I think. It became a space that wasn't really delivering anything positive for me. It became a space for people to rant and rave about everything. And I was like, I actually don't need this in my life.
Yeah.
So Instagram's kind of my space. Then I just started blocking people on Instagram because they'd send me really abusive stuff. I just block them. And then they get annoyed with you for blocking them. So then their friend gets onto you.
What kind of abusive stuff? Like, what's the tone of it?
Oh, what kind of abusive? Basically, we cause everything. That how dare you talk about weight? How dare you do this? How dare you do that? And then someone put together a clip of the show from the TV show from like years ago. It was a very different show then. And they and clip was almost all the worst bits, and they pushed that out, and then all of a sudden everyone got on the bandwagon again. You're like, this is not the same show. Watch what we do. We have adapted. It changes. But at the end of the day, you back yourself, right? And that's the important thing. You have to be able to say, look, what I tell the people, the leaders through the show, or through the podcast that I do, or whatever, is from science. It is from medicine. People who are far more qualified than I tell me, oh, morning, noon, and night. By having either of those two diseases, you're at a higher risk of all the other stuff. That's what it comes back to at the end of the day. So it's important. And I think even the fact that we're chatting about it, I think that's important too.
I think there are some issues around this that are, they're glaringly, obviously horrific. Like, I mean, the idea there that you said you're being trolled or taken out for discussing weight. I mean, where are we in the world where somebody is taken to pieces for discussing weight? But on a more humorous level, I remember I had one of my podcast guests who I enjoyed one of the best conversations with was a comedian called Martin Beans Ward. And Martin is gay and he is a traveler. And of course, I was very sensitive around him, but he tore me to shreds for being sensitive and went, Mario, I'm gay, I'm a traveler. Every joke in the book is there. And I'm intersectional, Mario, as well, because I'm gay and I'm a traveler. So the Venn diagram crosses over into all these areas. And then he went, and I'm overweight as well. So like I'm all the intersections at one. But you are, Carl, as well, because you are talking about social media there. And also in relation to people's weight. So you're hugely intersectional. And that's interesting that you left Twitter. I mean, did you find that this bandwagon thing was becoming very personally abusive to you?
Oh, absolutely. You were called everything. You'd no reply. And because you just couldn't be bothered. Because a lot, it was so one-dimensional and one-directional that actually, what's the point in replying? It didn't get you anywhere. Because a lot of the time, people are trying to soak you into a row and into whatever. And at the end of the day, you've got to take a very big, deep breath. And you've just got to say, hold on a second here. What am I actually doing? And say, what do I do for a living? You know, what is my job here? My job is to educate the public. And if it, section of that public isn't happy, and you know, the funniest part of all of it is several of those who jumped on that bandwagon, who had the profile to do a column in a newspaper or whatever, I meet them every now and again, and of course when you meet them, they wouldn't even bring it up. They wouldn't even mention it, because you're face to face. It's such a different thing. And I talk about it all day long. I think it should be talked about, and I think that it's important. And as I get older, you know, I've got to mind my own weight and I've always had to do that, because I'm not some people in my role are naturally kind of built like that, or they're obsessively kind of built like that. I would regard myself as someone who's quite normal, and I've got to mind my own weight as much as the next person. I think that makes me. I'm not coming at it or preaching at it, but it is an important health indicator. But it's sad that. It's that kind of cancel culture almost, you know, and it became that last year. And in all fairness to the production company, we had a meeting. We said, what are we going to do? So we're going to do what we do best. We're going to make the best show possible. And that's what we did. And our viewership stayed in around that kind of, you know, nearly 30% share. It's 33. It's higher this year, actually, so far. It's been higher, which is great. So our viewer continued to watch, despite the fact that this was going on in the background. Over the years, you get emails from people. Like I work in a very interesting industry full of people who are very, I wouldn't describe myself as one of them. I'm not particularly confident. I am in some respects. I'm not cocky. I don't describe myself as being kind of over, you know, if you think of a PT, that if you're doing a skit on a PT, you almost think of them as being kind of overbearing and overpowering and super cocky. And that's just part goes with the kind of the job title nearly. But like you'd be getting emails from them about the clothes you wear or how you stood or how you looked or how you whatever. And like it's hard. And it is hard. But actually, I've toughened up a little bit. And actually, what I tried to do, my way around it was trying to kill it with kindness. I'd offer to meet them for coffee. I said, okay, next time you're in Dublin, ring me. Tell me when you're coming up and let's go for lunch and have a proper chat about this. And then that would diffuse it, because they'd be so shocked by the answer. They wouldn't know what to do. And some would come back, and most of them wouldn't. They'd all shy away then, because you're not engaging in the row, and you're trying to bring it to a place of meet me face to face and let's have a proper chat about your issues with me or your issues with what I talk about. And they just don't. They're not. Yeah. That's the keyboard warrior thing. They're very happy to sit at home and do it, but you call it out and they tend to shy away quite quickly, you know?
Very good. Carl, if all the podcasts I've done in the last number of months, yours is the one that there are so many people who have been in touch with me going, I'll be listening to the Carl Henry podcast live. So loads of celeb friends of mine, I give them the secret streaming number. and they can listen online. Sometimes they're driving, sometimes they're out and about. But like about nine of them have asked me specifically if they can tune in. So actually the first call is from, he's driving. He says he's driving down past Dunamead. It's Keith Duffy. Say hello.
Hey, Keith. How are you?
How are you, buddy? I'm loving it. Loving the chat, buddies. Really enjoying it. And of course, I'm in fantastic physical condition. And not due in small part to people like Carl Henry and Pat Henry and, of course, my old pal, Body Bourne. Paul Bourne. But anyway, I have a question for Carl. Carl, we are all humans and we all feel the urge, i.e. the need to eat junk every so often. When you are at your lowest ebb, i.e. place, what junk food would you go to? Mine is a Chinese.
Good question, Keith. Good question. Garlic chips. Good question. Every time.
Ooh, garlic chips. Is that your dirty one?
I love really good garlic chips. Yeah, I do. Yeah. If I'm in a bad mood, which good happens every now and again. Garlic chips. Yeah.
Where would you get them, Carl? Absolutely.
I need a chipper. Yeah. Like, have to be like really good chips, and you know, but that could be once in. It's once in a blue moon, but garlic chips. They're just something kind of comforting, slightly warm about it.
Buddy? Sorry, it's me again. I just looked up garlic chips on the internet, and it says 1,150 calories. That equates to 8 hours on the treadmill for Carl Henry.
Balance. It's all about balance, isn't it?
Well, if you have garlic chips, Carl, are you the kind of person that goes, okay, I'm either going to go for a little run before I have the garlic chips, or will I go the next day? I'll definitely be doing some exercise. Or do you just go enjoy yourself?
I enjoy myself. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Life's too short. Like, seriously, if you want to have it, have it. So absolutely. And it's rare. It's every now and again, but they are delicious though.
Yeah. Yum. So that would be your treat. Garlic chips.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's the headline for tomorrow. I'm getting back to, thanks, Keith.
Thanks, buddies.
I'm getting back to a couple of serious points there as well. Let's put this one to bed. What about the culture that exists around the world to celebrate fatness? So in other words, do you think we're sending out the wrong message by saying being very overweight can be okay?
I think that it's being normalized, okay? Mm. And that's society reacting to society, because society's numbers, we know over 70% are overweight or obese on a general level. So we're normalizing it. Is it okay to say that it's healthy from a physical perspective and from a medical perspective? It's not healthy. So that's the reality of it. Yeah, and that's not... And that's not to shame anybody, but we do know that you are at a higher risk absolutely everything.
Exactly.
But you can, I do, and it's not been evasive, but I do think you can match that with, you know, everyone has a right to be happier and a right to feel good about themselves, regardless, take weight out of the equation. Weight is one equation of health. From a mental health perspective, an emotional health perspective, we should all be aiming to be happier in ourselves. And I think that applies for everybody, regardless of weight. I think weight is one element of it. I think, can you promote the fact that being having overweight or having obesity is healthy? I don't think you can, because that's not factually correct. I know what you're trying to get me to do, that can they live side by side or not? I do think they can. I think that we should all be, from a mental health perspective, be happier in ourselves and work to improve that. And can we be healthier at any weight? We absolutely can. By being stronger, by being cardiovascularly fitter, yes, we can. And that ties in with your mental health. But if you bring Dr. Donal O'Shea, or Professor Donal O'Shea, or any consultant on your show and say, tell me about the risks, they will tell you the gateway issue is, by having overweight or obesity, the risk factors are higher. And you just have to, accept that. And you can accept that and try and improve it by being healthier, or you can accept it and not try and improve it. But then later on down the line, that you are at a higher risk of all the stuff. I do think you have to look at health very holistically and try and find the positives. And even as a person, that's what I do for a living. My job is to help people be more positive and feel better. So there are... Yes, it's having overweight or obesity are massive issues for health, but you can still be healthier at that size, and you can have better mental health at that size, and you should have those things.
Well, here's another one I'm interested in. Is the word fat allowed, disallowed, and where do you stand on the word fat?
That's a wonderful question. That really is a genuinely wonderful question. isn't allowed. Well, in the same way skinny is a word, and skinny is a word that's allowed, and you see it banded about a lot. Fat is a word that... I suppose if I'm coming at it from a societal perspective, right, that it's going to go to having it. If you look at obesity and overweight, they're now not just words, they're actually diseases. And I think as a word, I think people have associations with the word. You can't, it's almost like a banned word now that you can't really use it.
That's what I'm getting at.
Should it be banned? I don't think so. I don't think so. I think that, again, that's like, you know, it's culture, really, isn't it? Trying to be very safe and very kind of, you know, let's safe. But as a word, I don't would be the answer I would use to that. I don't think it should be banned. I don't think it should be taken out of the whatever. It's just a word. I think, and maybe it's more, it's how we react to the word is more the issue, you know? Like, the more you run from stuff like this, okay, and the more you try and hide stuff like this, you just pull back to, you know, when Healthy Ireland released the latest figures for the obesity in, rates in Ireland, or the or across all age profiles, or the EU do the same, or WHO do the same, and we look at 70% plus are overweight, or, you know, like, the issue is getting worse. And that comes back to education. That comes back to, I think, government incentives to incentivize people to be healthier. There's calls for the Garda fitness test to be abolished. You're like, what the hell is that? Where is that coming from? Because a few people can't pass it. And you're like, well, don't move the test. Just knuckle down and pass it. Like, it's, the issues are getting bigger, and we need to address them, because in the long run, we're all going to be impacted by it, you know? To show how far we've come from a society perspective, like, if you think of, I'm trying to think of the author, Ruth, what was her second name? She produced a book about 10 years ago, roughly, called Run, Fat Bitch, Run. Mm. Would that be released this year through a publisher? I'm not sure it would.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
As a title, you know?
Another caller on the line for you. Old friend of yours, Carl. I think she's out for a run. Say hello to, it's Dr. Ava. Say hello.
Ava Orsmond, how are you?
Hello, Carl. Carl, how are you? It's so good to talk to you. Oh my God, you're looking so slim and svelte. You're not fat at all. But you know, I have a problem with that word, because there are some people who are fat, 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 fat. They are grotesque. They are fatty. They are tubby, fatty, fat men and fat women. And I think, Carl, looking at the season this year, you are being too soft. You've gone too soft. You need the old days. You need, you know who you need to get on the show this time, Carl? Ray Goggins. You need Ray Goggins. You need Hell Week. Hang those fatties upside down on hooks. And you feed them little blades of celery every time they do something nice to the little fattinesses. Would you do this? Get Ray Goggins in.
Your voice brings back memories of working together. Put it that way. I can remember you very loud and clear now. That's
how did
sure.
we get on, Carl?
Oh, very well. Very well. Of course.
Did you? Yeah.
We did. We did. Like, Ava, I would consider her a friend. I would consider her someone who's very passionate about what she does. She's a bit straight for people, I think, in terms of her opinions. But it's coming from a good... I actually think it's coming from a good place.
I actually have a problem with Dr. Ava, Carl. You don't have to agree with me. Can I tell you my problem with her?
Go for it. Fire away.
My problem with her is that she advocates a kind of an 800 calorie a day diet.
Yeah.
And I think that's, I think that raises another question for our conversation, and I'd like you to address it. And that is the word. Actually, we could have made our little conversation just chapters about one words. But the word here now is calories. Is it all about calories? Is it all? We know that what goes in and what goes out is important, Carl. But Dr. Ava's emphasis is on calories, whereas I'm not so sure now, and of course I'm not an expert, so I must defer. Calories are sheer mathematical number, but there are good calories and there are bad calories.
There are.
And some people would advocate it's more about the quality and the nutrient denseness of the food that you eat that is equally as important as the sheer calorific value. Discuss.
Okay, so I would agree with you in the fact that very low calorie diets, for the most part, unless medically advised by a consultant for certain diseases, is not the way to go, put it that way. So I'd agree with you on that. I think that's very fair. We need calories to live. They're very, very important. Are all calories equal? That's another great question. Personally, I would side with you, and I would agree that good quality calories are different and healthier than calories that come from really high processed foods. Interestingly, when it comes to the body, though, and when it comes to the body and weight, actually, once your number from a weight loss perspective or from a general health perspective, say 2,000 calories a day is what you're eating. From a health perspective, those calories should be made up of proteins and carbohydrates and fats. And, you know, you make it yourself, the least processed foods. That's the health angle on it. But a lot of people, if you look at the industry, it's all about calorie counting to lose weight. And they will say that if it's 2,000 calories at McDonald's, it doesn't really matter. Once you hit your number, that you're burning more than that number, and that's where you lose weight. I come at health or my profession from a health and wellness perspective. So, for example, I would go, the quality of the calories is absolutely crucial, and that's more important than anything else, having color on your plate. So, yes, a calorie is a calorie, but it's not really. The quality of the calorie is far, far more important. You should always eat for health and aim for health, as opposed to just hitting a number and making it up with really high processed foods. But it's a really, it's a fascinating area. Social media would have you believe that it doesn't really matter, but I would still say I'm older than that, than a lot of those opinions. It's about quality. The quality of that calorie is absolutely crucial. Mm-hmm. And having calories from healthier sources, absolutely crucial as well.
Yeah. Another word, I'm going to combine two of our words now that we've used to ask you one question. And the two words I'm going to ask is, first of all, it's a suggestion for you. Maybe you've already taken it on board. It's a suggestion for your program. And I just thought of it today, actually. And I don't know if it's something you've talked about already, but the emphasis on Operation Transformation was about losing weight and being healthy. Now it's about kind of a holistic approach and being healthy, doing some weight, getting active, doing some exercise, being active. Mental health is in there as well. And just wellness in general, this word that has come into vogue in the last few years. But there is such a concept, as you'd be aware, Carl, called skinny fat. And skinny fat
there is.
Skinny fat describes, as far as I know, again, I defer to your better knowledge, but skinny fat describes a person who looks absolutely fine on the outside, but their diet is absolutely dreadful and their organs are replete with fat, but it doesn't show exogenously, it shows endogenously, and they are skinny fat.
Yeah.
And I was going to say that perhaps that might be an interesting, I don't know, maybe an interesting thing to show on your program, almost to equalize it, that a person, imagine they show up on the first day and people on television are going, he's grand or she's grand. Yeah. And that person then explains, no, I'm not grand. I'm actually really thin.
Well, interesting enough, we get that. Last year we got that. And this year we're getting it a little bit with our male leader. Our leader this year is 15 and a bit stone. And people are looking at him thinking, why is he on a weight loss show? That's normal. Well, actually, it's not. So your whole concept of skinny fat's great because it's actually very true. That, you know, from a visible out, visibly from the outside, you're only seeing the outside. So the beauty of that is through the show that we measure everything inside. So, you know, we can tell people, look, you might be whatever weight you are, but the weight's irrelevant. Weight doesn't tell you anything about your health. Your visceral fat is off the charts, i.e. you're at a massive risk of X, Y, and Z. Mm. Or your body fat's is high, your muscle mass is too low, your bone density is too low, you're dehydrated because you're not getting enough water in. So it drives home the point that weight as a number on its own and visible weight as a number, as a way of thinking someone's healthy or not, doesn't really tell you anything. Like, they're very poor indicators of actual health. So it's all about getting to look inside the body a little bit. Like, DEXA scan is gold standard. Then you go down the smart scales route, which is what we have. We have the best one that we can get, which is the Tanita one. And it's fascinating. Like that, if you look at the metabolic age profiling that we do, and that shocks everybody because they jump on, and if they have too much body fat and not enough muscle, they're older than their actual age, and that always riles people because they get such a shock from it, and then they go and they improve their health and their metabolic age comes down. So it is, it's a nice way to chat about weight that it isn't on its own. It's a very poor indicator of absolute. It doesn't tell you anything really.
Okay.
Muscle mass and fat mass will tell you far more, and hydration levels will tell you far more about your actual health and where that fat is, whether it's on the skin so you can pinch it or you can see it, or if it's internal, so it's behind the organs inside.
Yeah. I thought that was very interesting what you said about the gentleman who was 15 stone, because I think that's where the issues are a lot. I mean, I think that anybody who's, it's possible for somebody who is 24 stone as you've seen, it's very, if they are disciplined and if they attend to their health, they will go from 24 stone to 18 stone pretty quickly because the fat just falls off them. And then the next part, it might be a bit slower, but they'll still get there. But it's those people who are just a stone and a half overweight. That's the really, really hard. And this is me. This is me. And this is I've been telling Patrick for years, this whole thing of I struggle with the, if I look at a Mars bar, you know, it'll go on my waist. So I'm one of those people that's sensitive to putting on a little bit of.
Join the club. You listen, we're common. We've a common trait in that one, and I'm very like that. You know
exactly. Yeah. So it's that struggle that, like, for example, you might be working out 5 days a week or doing sport. In my case, I play tennis at a decent level 3 or 4 times a week, and I walk 7 or 8 kilometers 2 times a week. So I'd be 6 times a week. I would be doing good exercise. And yet, if I don't watch what I eat in my diet, my weight will just go up. Now, recently, this is to wit my next question. Recently, last May, I was 14 stone 7. And today, I am 13 stone 1, Carl. So I have made a significant amount of progress in about 7.5 months. However, if you look at me now, right, if I've stood in front of you now, one of the last words you'd use would be overweight, even just objectively. And yet, when I put my BMI into the machine, it describes me as being quite overweight. And I find that, first of all, I'm disgusted. I want to get that scales, throw it out the window. I want to smash the phone off the wall. I want to headbutt myself into the wall because I'm clearly not overweight. Yet the BMI is telling me that I'm overweight. Now, so I console myself after hearing this by going, Brian O'Driscoll was described as being clinically obese when he was at the peak of his career. Because Brian O'Driscoll was just very, 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 very small bit smaller than me. So he's about 5'9.5" and he was 15 stones, which is clinically obese. Brian O'Driscoll, one of the best athletes in world rugby.
Yep.
So what the hell do they think? What the hell is this BMI business? And people are going around doing their heads in.
They are. Okay, so I would agree. I'm with you on that one. You'll very rarely hear me talk about BMI. It's a very poor indicator of your actual health. All it says is you are X height, you should be Y weight. It's actually one of the, for say 20 years, it was at the forefront for a medical perspective of weight recommendations, but it's gone and it's beginning to taper off now. It's being replaced with the likes of waistline, with the smart scales becoming more normalized, muscle levels, fat levels. It doesn't tell you much about your health. It really doesn't. And like with my clients, I don't use it with them at all because I care more about their waistline, their muscle, their fat. And that is important for me. So if anyone is listening in, BMI doesn't predict a huge amount. It's classifications, right? And if you look at like a Brian O'Driscoll will be one of the smaller Irish rugby players. If you bring Keane Healy into the room, who, you know, might be, I don't know what Keane Healy is, but he's certainly 110 when he was at his big, when he was, you know, playing for Ireland. He's off the charts, like in terms of the BMI scale, but actually he's got loads of muscle mass. He's eating huge quantities of protein on top of all his training load to look like that. And actually, just pick it up on something you mentioned there at the start, you know, for people who are very heavy, when they begin to lose weight, it does fall off quite quickly. What we do, one of the things that we haven't really gone there yet with obesity is that we know that for those who are very, very overweight or very, very obese, dietary interventions, the success rate of them is fairly low, actually. So like if you say 25 stone plus, 30 stone plus, dietary interventions for that profile, the long-term success rate is really low. So you say to me, okay, what do you do there? Well, surgery, that's where surgery becomes an option. And bariatric surgery is important. It is a preventer. Again, the HSEs, their route of tackling obesity is going to be the surgical option. The issue with that in terms of, for that sector of society is the availability of the surgery. The waiting list is years long. It's several years to get into the treatments in Loughlinstown. And I think the last I heard it was 6 or 7 years before the actual surgery can happen itself. So, you know, we are a society. There are different ways now of helping people who are very, very overweight and very, very obese to lose weight. But the issue is access. that the demand is far outweighing the supply and what the country can produce. So it's interesting, but it is important to talk about that for that sector. That, you know, surgery is absolutely an option, and we know that just the dietary interventions alone, the success rate is very, it's about less than 20% for long-term health.
We have another call coming in, Carl, and it's from Christy Moore, would you believe? Say hello to Christy.
Hey, Christy, how are you?
How are you, Carl? Oh, Jesus, I'm really getting a buzz listening to this, and I'm thinking it's January and new me, new year, all this sort of stuff, but I have a bit of a belly on me myself. And I've had it for a few years, and I like singing, and normally I lose a couple of kilos in a concert because I'm sweating like a pig. But I'm just wondering, the weight doesn't come off then totally, and I'm wondering, my big problem, Carl, is the owl nibbles in the evening. And I'm wondering, could you give me an owl hand and just, what would you, you know, you've had your dinner, you've had the breakfast, you've had the lunch, but then it's 9:30, and prime time is on, and Miriam O'Callaghan is walking on there, and you get the old, you're thinking of putting on the old cup of tea, and you're, the biscuits and the hobnobs are looking out at you, and they're begging you, they're begging, go on, Christy, take me. But they're the fellas that are keeping the belly on, Carl. Can you, is there any healthy snack that you would recommend to satiate, is that the word, a man's appetite in the evening? Just a wondering, thanks, for a friend.
Great question, Christy. Great question.
Well,
first of all,
question.
we all love a chocolate hobnob. Who doesn't? Like, seriously, yeah, they're absolutely gorgeous, but they're also addictive, and you go through the whole packet before you know it. Yeah. A couple of things there. One is for a situation like that, you eat more over the course of the day. You look at your protein intake, ensure that you're getting enough protein over the course of the day, because that helps with sight. It helps keeps us full, basically. Yeah. In terms of snacks, then you go down the route of a protein-based snack or even a yogurt-based snack are really handy as well. So the small yogurts work really, really well. The kind of kiddie-sized ones are very handy. They'll tick that box. Nuts, seeds, protein ball are really good. And obviously, the chocolate digestive every now and again, absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. That's, you know, that's very normal. And that's the balanced approach to health. And, you know, that's my own take on health, is that it's 80-20, that 80% of the time it's healthy and you know you're eating good food, and then 20% of the time you're having the odd treat. So, Chris, you have the odd treat and don't worry about it too much, but 80% of the time try and be healthy.
Thanks, Carl. I really appreciate that. I'm going out to get myself a Magnum almond now. Cheers.
Oh, enjoy that, Christy. Anyway, listen, what else was I going to say? Oh, yeah, there's another caller on the line, actually. George Hook is on the line. Say hello.
George, I'm looking forward to this. How are you?
Carl! How are you? It's great to hear you. You're looking absolutely amazing on my live stream. Come here. I've applied to next year to be a judge on Operation Transformation. I think the problem with the judges at the moment is they don't say it like it is. Hey, fatty, get off the scales. Get more carbs into you. Or whatever. What do you think? Do you think I'm a bit too? Do you think I'd get cancelled, Carl? Or do you think it needs judges like me to tell it how it is?
George, you'd be cancelled very quickly, that's for sure. You know what, though? I don't think it needs, and in seriousness, I don't think TV needs that. I think that's where it bring back to our earlier conversation around stigma and kind of weight stigma. A lot of it comes from that kind of, you know, go hard or go home, and screaming and shouting at people, almost like the SAS Who Dares Wins. Ray Goggins will kill me.
Yeah.
But, you know, the screaming and shouting thing. And when it comes to health, no one needs that. We're all, you know, that's I think that's gone with the 90s. And I think that approach doesn't help anybody. If anything, it turns more people off trying to be healthy, and it turns more people off even thinking about trying to be healthy, because they think that that's how they're going to be perceived by health professionals. Like, I talk to the five leaders and my colleagues on the panel, like I would talk to any client that I work with, and I always have done that. And I think that's important, because you just, there, as far as I'm concerned, they are my client. I'm there to mind them and look after them. So I would talk to them on telly just like I would a client. And I think that's important, because it shows that when it comes to weight, it is a safe space that everyone's there to help. It's not, we're not going to bark at you. That belittling side of it, that's gone. That Biggest Loser vibe where they're all just, it's been screamed and shouted at. When it comes to health, no. Doesn't help anybody, that's for sure.
Carl, they're now they feel that the podcast is getting close to the end, so they're all calling in now. Miriam O'Callaghan is on the line. Say hello.
Hello, Miriam. How are you?
Hi, Carl. I'm really enjoying the show. Genuinely informative and enlightening discussion. I mean, I don't think I ever see myself being on Operation Transformation, the celebrity version. I mean, not a chance. But I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions. You know, you look really well, you know, in general. I wonder, since you started the show, did you notice a kind of an uptick in, like, female attention?
What a question. You get an uplift in attention generally, obviously, because you're on the telly, and you'll get that, right, Miriam, and yourself, Mario. I'm sure you get that too.
Well, I mean, you're not exactly an ugly bugly. You're quite a handsome fella. You've got that classic, tall, you know, kind of tall, dark, and handsome look. I mean, let me be honest with me. Did you have, I mean, because I'd be interested in, I mean, what I get is, like, with all due respect to you, Miriam, I get large numbers of ladies of a certain age coming up to me going, oh my God, I adore Miriam. So I would get that. But did you find that you've got attention over the last 5 years?
Yeah, you do. Oh, of course you do. Absolutely. You do. You do.
Do you like it?
Do I like it? I don't mind it. Mm. It's quirky, right? It takes a bit of getting used to it. I think because I'm there that long, people really think that they know you. So that,
yeah,
like at the 5K, it's just a hugathon. You just get hugged by 5,000 people for like an hour. It's lovely. And like, I find it very, 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 what's the word I would use? I find it very rewarding in that someone has the, like, I'm just a little part of a big show. I'm a tiny little part of a big show. You know what I mean? Like, it's not my show. I'm just one little bit of it.
But does a woman ever sidle her way up to you and go, you know, under the pretexts of I'd like to work out and kind of look better, kind of go, hey, Carl, how are you? Listen, what do you think we should do? Do you want to go?
Well, actually, Carl, can I just get in there a minute? Because I heard you saying a few minutes ago that you were available for free coffees. You fancy a coffee and Rathgar anytime?
They generally say you look slimmer off the telly. That's what I generally get. Or you look better off the telly, which I take as a compliment, obviously.
Sorry, Miriam just invited you out for a coffee in Rathgar there.
I'm there. Absolutely. Absolutely. You do, but like, that's just part of it. And I just find it very, and I'm not skirting the question. I am a bit. I'm not really skirting the question. But I just find it lovely that someone kind of, and it's not always, by the way, it's not always you're great. Sometimes people, oh, you're this or you're that, or whatever. But it's generally nice. Or if I go to a restaurant sometimes and the table beside me and the clock, particularly on the shoulder, you're the fella and they're eating their pizza. Yeah. Really conscious of it, right?
And do they kind of get a bit embarrassed by that?
They do. Then we have a big chat but I like people. I do. But I find it very, it's just really nice when someone thinks enough of what you do to come and say, geez, you know, I lost whatever, or I ran a 5K because of that whatever. It's very, it revs you up when you are quite shy and insecure would be the wrong word, but when you're quite shy and you have to rev yourself up for all of that side of work that I do, it gives you a reason to do it, which is that people, they do listen and you make a difference to even one person. It's worth getting nervous and getting anxious and getting kind of stressing out over the process of it and being on telly and being out there. It's stressful and it's very, some people lap it up. I find it takes a lot of work for me to get myself to that point. I enjoy it, but I do find a lot of work to do it. It takes a lot out of me to do it.
Listen, thanks a million for engaging. Thanks a million for taking the call. And I really enjoyed my chat with you. And that's a lovely workout room you have there for yoga as well.
Thank you. I really enjoyed our chat. Some really deep questions, but it was really, really thought-provoking. And it was great crack. Fair play to you.
Thanks, Carl. My thanks to Carl Henry for that lovely chat. And good luck to him in all he does. And if you're out there, get going. Get running, get walking. Don't go too hard on yourself, though. I see so many runners on the streets, and you can see that they're not used to running, and you'll only do damage to your joints. So maybe start fast walking, first of all.
and that might be a better way to go. If you want to see me in tour, I'm starting a tour February 24th, Castlebar, and all over the country. Cork, Killarney, Waterford, Limerick, Galway, Sligo, Wexford, everywhere. Mullingar, I'm everywhere. Go on to Ticketmaster and Mario Rosenstock and you'll find me there. Same time, same place next week. Catch you then.